Hi, thanks for joining Grief and Frozen Lasagnas every first and third Thursdays. I'm your host, Veronica Day. This podcast is devoted to talking openly about grief and how to help someone who's grieving. We're not licensed professionals nor grief experts. We're just real people with real stories regarding grief, all types of grief. Sometimes it will be sad, sometimes it might make you laugh, but whatever the case, we strive to be honest and real. I launched this podcast to help people begin more conversations about grief, not just the surface level, I'm so sorry for your loss, but deeper conversations and what grief really looks like. I wanted to help those who are helping friends who are grieving. I recently had the opportunity to sit down with my friend Jocelyn Tyner and just have a conversation about grief, about the grief you feel with a miscarriage, the grief you feel when you can't get pregnant, the grief you feel regarding all of the things that come along with this. Sometimes it's hard to get our heads around the things that happen to us or the things that don't happen to us. These feelings are big and sometimes very difficult to navigate, especially when we have outside forces trying to weigh in. You question your thoughts. You wonder, why did this happen? Is what I'm feeling okay? When does it get better? Basically, just a constant barrage of stuff going on in your head and in your body, and it's exhausting. And sometimes it's not visible to others, which makes it even harder. But you're not alone. I want to include a trigger warning. During this episode, we talked about miscarriages and sexual abuse. Hey.
Hello.
Hi. What's your shirt say?
It says, Holy Forking Shirt Balls. It's from The Good Place.
I like that. I miss that show.
I feel like too.
I needed one more episode of that and Schitt's Creek and definitely one more season of Ted Lasso.
Okay, we haven't watched Ted Lasso, but so I've rewatched The Good Place so many times and Schitt's Creek so many times.
Me too.
That we bought the DVDs because we're like, get them while they're still making DVDs.
So I really love that we are recording this on the anniversary of the episode that aired with you last time.
I know. I realized that before you texted, I was like, how kismet is this?
Yeah.
This is really neat. But I it feels good to acknowledge painful things and just own that they happened. And you know, and so to me, it's more that like I like using my full name.
I do too. I'm the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, but thank you so much for taking time out to do this and have this talk.
Yeah.
This is just a hard topic. Until I tried to get pregnant, I knew fertility was a tricky subject for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how common miscarriages were until I started paying attention to me trying to get pregnant and noticing women around me getting pregnant and then having miscarriages.
Right.
And it seemed like a lot. It seemed like every single one of them had experience with it. And I was so blown away. I don't know. Everyone experiences it differently because there's a million different things that could go wrong.
Right.
So with you, because I don't know the whole story. Mm-hmm. Were you trying to get pregnant?
No, not at all. I was trying to remember exactly when this was. This was probably 15 years ago. So maybe, but yeah, like 15 years ago, I was in a relationship with a guy who, like, we weren't right for each other really, but we hadn't been together for that long. It was less than a year. And getting pregnant was an accident. I had never wanted to be pregnant or have kids at all. And And so yeah, completely unplanned. And I have history with sexual abuse. And I think that's really important to go ahead and say here, because I dissociated for a really long time. So when I got pregnant, I don't think I really fully experienced it. It was like a big shock. It scared the crap out of me. I just remember being really, really scared and frozen, and just like, okay, I need to tell my boyfriend, you know? And so I drove to his work and, you know, and like sat in the parking lot, and he came out and I told him in the car, and his immediate reaction was like, he was excited and happy. And, and I can't quite emphasize this enough. Dissociation is like a way of life for some people, and it really was that for me. So when I describe this, it's going to sound super weird, but I was very disconnected from it, and it was like in my brain I went, "Oh, he's happy. I should be happy about this. I can be happy about this, and I can be excited too." And so whenever I would tell family and like, you know, friends, it came out like, "I'm really excited," you know.
Interesting. And, okay.
But I never felt it. Never felt it. And always felt a disconnect. Always felt like I was wrong. There was something wrong with me. And that's not just with the pregnancy. That's like an always thing. So
you mean with wanting to have children, you mean?
No, just like there is something wrong with me, with how I walk through life. And it was just a, you know, just sort of a thing that was kind of in the back of my head always. And I think it's part of the dissociating. That's part of it.
Okay.
But I've read since then, years since then, that when women have like a traumatic sexual past, they can be re-traumatized with pregnancy and re-traumatized with miscarriage.
I did not know that.
And reading that later, you know, years later afterwards, I thought, oh God, that makes so much sense. No wonder that was so weird for me, because I was essentially having like PTSD type responses of feeling physically disconnected from my body through that whole process. So I think that's important to say, because like you said, everyone's experience is different of this anyway, right?
Right.
And if you add this other layer of past trauma to it, it just makes it that much more confusing to navigate, you know, because it's like I couldn't even figure out how I felt about it in the moment. So I was pregnant for the first trimester, and like somewhere near the end of that 3 months, miscarried. And it was, I think, the most physical pain I've ever been in. I don't know if it's like that for everybody, or if it was more painful because of the past trauma, because you tense things and, you know, and so, so different things can be more painful if you're having like a anxiety heightened experience of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really, really painful. And I was at home. And my boyfriend was with me, and he was really, really supportive and with me right there next to me through the whole thing. And yeah, I don't know. I remember crying a lot. I remember being horrified by just the visual of everything. And I won't go into specifics, but
no, that's okay.
Right. Being really horrified, really, really in pain, crying, feeling the loss. It was all very overwhelming. And then at some point I just stopped. And this is a dissociative thing. I just stopped crying and everything, and kind of went like away. I don't know how else to describe that.
Like you kind of checked out?
Definitely. And okay. And then from that point on, I was just really, really depressed. I remember calling my doctor's emergency line that right after it happened, or maybe he called while it was, I don't know, but I talked to my doctor that afterwards that day, and she was like, we really want women to come in for a DNC afterwards because you could have blood clotting. But I asked her to tell me what the procedure was, and she did, and that sounded horrific too. And I love my doctor. My gynecologist is absolutely the best there is, and she has been so good with me from my very first pap smear when I had a panic attack on her table all the way to now. Like, she's been my doctor for 20 years, and she's amazing. And I trust her, but I could not do that procedure. It was too heightened, and I was too in the PTSD of it and mm-hmm. to be able to do that. And so she was really great. She said, okay, well, completely your decision, right? If you don't want to come in for that, we just need to test your blood for a little while to make sure you're not anemic and watch things. And I was like,
make sure you're healthy.
Fine, let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah. So I went into the doctor's office. I don't know if it was like once a month or every 3 months, but it was for a long stretch. I felt like I was giving blood all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just a period of my life. And now every time I give blood, it's like no big deal. But I have this memory of giving blood afterwards. Every single time it was the same nurse. And she was really, really nice and gentle. And she had a daughter named Jocelyn. And I know that because she had a piece of paper on a magnet on her filing cabinet where her daughter had drawn in crayon a picture and put her name on it, and it said Jocelyn. And so anytime I went in, it was this awful, awful reason to be there, right?
Right.
Yeah. But that was so comforting to see the same nurse every single time and have this moment of, oh yeah, that's right, your daughter's name is Jocelyn. But because it's not common. It's weird, the things that stick in your memory.
For the longest time, I did not want children with my first. So listeners, I've been married before. Surprise, surprise. I am actually my third husband. But even with my first husband, we didn't want kids. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't want children. And it wasn't like I kept it a secret or I hid it or anything. I've been very open about, with guys I date, hey, I don't want children. If that is something you're interested in, then we can go on a few dates, go see some movies, have a good time. But I'm not your long-term person, right? Mm-hmm. And that was fine. And we got divorced for other reasons. And then I met Travis, and I was in my 30s. And I said, I gave them the I don't want children speech. If that's mm-hmm. something you're interested in, yada, yada, yada. And he was okay with that. And I think that surprised his parents, because I think they always thought he wanted children. And then, fast forward a number of years, and all of a sudden, something just clicked in me. And I thought, I do want children. Let me rephrase that. I wanted children with that person.
Mm.
It wasn't like I just wanted children. I wanted our child.
Right.
But leading up to that, it was always when people would say, oh, when they find I'm married, when someone's first meeting you, some of the standard questions are, someone first meets you, are you married? What do you do for a living? Where do you live? The get to know you questions. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they found out I was married, they would say, oh, do you have children? And I know that's kind of just a norm that people have fallen into.
Yeah.
But it's such an odd question. That's like, and I used to get really offended by it. I would get my feathers all ruffled. And that was just me being dramatic. I know, right? Oh, I was like, no. Oh, well. And then it would be followed with these phrases. Oh, there's still time.
Uh-huh.
Or what's the matter? Don't you like children? You could always adopt. That's true. I could. And I always thought, wow, that's a very personal conversation I'm having with someone I just met, you know, or even people I knew. I remember once getting into an argument with this man I worked with, a pretty loud argument. Like other coworkers came out, and was it professional? No, you know, but we were in our own little offices and everything, so no one else except our team heard it. But he called me selfish. He said, "Well, how selfish are you going to be?"
Rude.
Okay.
What is, I mean,
Oh, no, it gets better. And then he went on to say, "Well, you know, you have to have children." He's
have
like,
to.
"I have to. I have to. I'm sorry. I did not read that in the rule book." And then he went on to tell me, "You don't know what love, real love is unless you have until you have a child." You know, I've heard that one a lot. And then he said, "No, my favorite one was, who's going to take care of you when you're older?"
It's so crazy. I some of those things have never been said to me,
Oh,
but
all of these things have been sent to me multiple times by
yeah,
many different people
I've
over
heard
the
them from
last.
other people. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, wow, who's going to take care of me when I'm older?
That's such a
And now
bizarre.
here's the thing. And I shot back. I was like, well, even if I had children, one, they may not be healthy enough to take care of me. They may not live near me. They may not like me. Maybe they don't have the funds to take care of me.
Yeah.
And so I thought, what a strange statement. Who's going to take care of me when I'm older? And I still don't have any children, so I guess no one. I went home. I was really pissed off. And Travis got to hear about it for several days. And I thought, we'll just have to make good choices and plan for our future. And in the meantime, we'll just spoil our nieces and nephews. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
That one, it was in, I think, 2016 when something just shifted. And I had been thinking about it. And I thought, I really want to have kids with Travis. Really want to. I thought, well, how do I approach this subject? You know, because we're so far into our marriage and we're doing great, you know. And I remember we were on a beach on vacation with lots of people around. So I told him, I said, I have something I want to discuss with you. And he goes, now? And I'm like, yeah. I'm thinking, you can't yell at me in front of all these people. Or you can't have a fight on the beach in front of all these people. We're laying on the beach, we've got the, you know, the big cabana umbrella over us, you know, we're having a great time. We were in Hawaii. And I said, I've been giving this a lot of thought. And for like the last 6 months, I wanted to have this conversation with you, but you know, we'd always agreed we weren't gonna have children. He just sat up. I thought, oh no. Oh crap, here it comes. And he looks at me, he goes, really? He goes, because I've been feeling the exact same way. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. So
Yeah.
it worked out really well. We started trying. And then after a long time of trying, you know, I tried fertility stuff and you know, and all that comes with it. That's hard too. And
Yeah.
I've had friends who've done this and they've miscarried. And it's like you work so hard. And your body goes through so much. It was awful. And I felt ugly and fat and undesirable. And that made it hard to want to, you know, get sexy. You know what I mean? It's just like I feel like crap. And then for every month, you know, nothing. You know,
Yeah.
I wouldn't be pregnant. And then I had these friends that were trying and they would get pregnant and then they weren't.
Right.
And I thought, that's got to be just, I know how bad I felt. And I thought, this just must be so hard for them on so many levels, you know, and for something that they wanted. And
Right.
when I had friends who weren't planning on it, they were kind of like in your situation, they didn't want kids and they got pregnant and then they lost the child. There was all kinds of emotions they talked about, like
Yeah.
guilt, depression, frustration, questioning everything.
Yeah, I remember when I was much younger. Even what I always would get told when I said that I knew I didn't want to be a parent, I didn't want to have kids, was, oh, well, you'll change your mind. Like it was
Oh,
a given,
God, I
and
hate that one.
that annoyed me because I was like, no, I know myself, right? And so
I found it insulting. I'm like, oh, so you think you know better than I know me? Okay.
I would
sure,
just
whatever.
Let it go. But yeah, I mean, so I, with my miscarriage, I got extremely depressed for a while. You know, my job at the time was in retail. I had to do customer service. And so I was like, I cannot do this. I cannot make the day better for other people right now. I am just a complete wreck. And so they were really great and gave me a different role where I could just do stock room, and that's all I did. And mm-hmm. so I just got to be really antisocial at work and go in the back room and do stock room and listen to the radio. And then I would go home and then I would sit in the dark in my bedroom watching TV, and who knows where my, you know, boyfriend was at this point. And, you know, because I wasn't like communicating anything with mm-hmm. him. I cannot emphasize this enough. We were not right for each other, and he didn't know how to help me through this. And I didn't know how to express what I needed, and did not know I was dissociating, did not know I was dealing with this on that level. And another thing that I think is really, really difficult, or was really difficult, I'll just speak for me, right? What
okay.
was difficult for me,
yeah,
was that I did not want to be a parent and did not want to have kids. And yet I had been pregnant. I had made the decision that I was going to be happy about it, like a conscious choice, and then miscarried and had this big loss. And a miscarriage is a physical loss, not just an emotional loss, you know?
Right.
So it's like literally your body losing things, and you feel it all go away. And there's hormonal aspects to it. Like this was such a mind fuck, because I couldn't parse out, you know, my body wanted to be pregnant again because it wasn't anymore. And so, like, biologically, I had this physical, I'm no longer pregnant, I want to be pregnant again. But in my heart and my mind and what I knew of myself, I did not want to be a parent. And so there was this big internal battle happening, and I did not get clarity on it for years. And started to think, well, maybe I will just be, it's just, maybe it's just a given. I'll get pregnant again. Because again, like, that's one of the rare things that people feel comfortable saying to you if you've had a miscarriage, is they say, well, lots of people get pregnant again, no problem, and the next pregnancy carries to term, and so it can happen and it'll be fine. That's not comforting to someone who does not want kids. So,
right.
So it was just like, I don't even, it was the most confused I've ever felt. Because there's loss and there's grieving and there's pain. And then there's also like guilt for not wanting it to begin with. And the relief that I'm not tied to this person who I'm not right for and who's not right for me. And relief that I'm not going to accidentally become a parent, combined with everything else. Oh yeah. Tons of guilt. Guilt for not wanting to try again, for not wanting to be pregnant again, when there are women out there. Like, I'm so glad you shared your story, because this is a perfect example. You know, we're friends, and I can say this to you, right? That, like, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't want to get pregnant again. But back then, I wouldn't have been able to say that to you, you know? And I would have felt so bad for saying that.
See, and this is why I'm glad we're having these conversations. I think these conversations are important. We shouldn't be ashamed of the way we feel.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to hide stuff that we're going through from our friends because it's, quote, not acceptable or whatever. you know, and I'm
or
just
somehow going to offend you. Like I would, you know,
hurt
like
my feelings.
Like
yeah.
Like you would take it personally that I don't
No.
want to have kids, right?
No,
Like that's not.
That's you. I mean,
yeah.
We've had other women on the show who've talked about losing, you know, their baby, and then they did get pregnant and then had their, I think it's called a rainbow baby. I think that's
Right.
right.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. If any listeners are out there, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. And, you know, they're on the other side of it, you know, after having this miscarriage, and it's still just a shit ton of emotions that you got to get through, whether it's guilt, it's relief, it's confusion, it's frustration. It's still grief in some form. And I think so many times that we don't say what's on our mind, what's in our heart, what we feel, because we're afraid. Afraid of what others might think of us, afraid of how we might be perceived. You know, I used to dread it when people would ask me, oh, do you have children? No.
Why not?
Yeah, well, how come? Why don't you guys want kids? You guys would have the cutest kids. I
You'd
used
be
to
a
say,
great parent, as if that's the reason.
Yeah,
yeah
and I was
I
like,
know I know I would be good at it, but just
back
because I
off.
would be good at something doesn't mean I want to do it. Like
exactly. Yeah. And you know, people who adopt are amazing. You know, that is something
yes.
that they're called to do, and I think that's wonderful and lovely. And when people still say to me, I'm like, Patrick and I have discussed it, but as we're getting a little bit older now, maybe I just go ahead and be that really cool aunt, you know?
Oh, totally.
And he
You
can be that
know,
really cool uncle.
You know what's funny too is I used to feel the need to qualify the no.
What do you mean?
Well, are you going to have kids? Was the question right after I got married.
Oh yeah.
And I said no. And they were like, and there would be a pause, and I'd be like, I just want to be the cool aunt. I love my nieces and nephews. Like, you know what I mean? And
Yeah. Well, I just did it here. I mean, you heard me do it.
I love kids. I just don't want to be a parent. Here's the thing. I don't love kids. I love my nieces, my niece and my nephew, my nieces and my nephews. Plural. There's plural.
Does
as
your
well.
family hear this show? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
But I don't love all kids. Most kids bug me. Most kids, I don't know how to relate to. I don't quite know how to interact with. I don't know how to be like, oh, what's age appropriate? Like, when can I talk to them like they're adults? And what, you know, like when I don't know how to play with them. And I've gotten to learn how to play with my nieces and nephews. And that has been a really great journey. And I love them. And I love being around them. And, you know, we have one of my nephews spends the night every once in a while, and we love being a safe place for him to come spend the night. And we have all the cool Legos that he can play with, and it's all really fun being the cool aunt and uncle. But no, I don't love all kids. That is patently false. I used to just say that like, it's okay that I don't want to be a parent because I still love kids. Like, why does that need to get said at all?
But no, it's, you know, and I don't think people realize when they say these things that sometimes they might be creating more grief for us.
It's well, yeah, because then you gotta like defend your decision,
Yeah,
right?
and then you're like, okay, is there something wrong? I used to think in my 20s, is there something wrong with me? And then immediately thought, psh, no, screw that. I know who I am. I know what I'm doing. You know, I was very strong-willed and dramatic.
See, I didn't ask, is there something wrong with me? I just thought there's definitely something wrong with me. But that was the trauma. That wasn't this.
Right. But, and see, like, I have always loved kids. I was just so sad when I just couldn't get pregnant. And then these women around me were having they would get pregnant, and I'd be jealous. I was jealous. And then they would have a miscarriage. And my heart would just break for them because, one, I knew how much I wanted it. And these were women who did who did want their babies. I thought, if I'm this sad, I can't imagine what they're going through. I wanted them to know that I don't know what to say, and but that's all I got. And sometimes that's enough.
Yeah, I remember when I had my miscarriage, I had a friend who had one before. And she reached out to me privately and just called, right, and said, sorry for your loss, that kind of thing, right? But then she said, we've never talked about this, but I had a miscarriage myself, and I had a lot of really bizarre thoughts about it later, and sometimes nightmares, and it was a very difficult, challenging, confusing time. And if you ever have anything like that and want to talk, you can call me. And I never had that kind of a response like myself. I didn't have nightmares. I didn't have that. I had a different kind of weird, confusing response. But her telling me that I've been through it, and if you ever need to talk about any of the fucked up thoughts you have afterwards, you can call me and tell me about it, was like the nicest thing, and it felt really great. And I did call her, I think, once. But yeah, I remembered that, and so. I've been to therapy a lot since my early 20s, and for different phases of healing trauma, right? Because lives are long, and we grow and we change and need different things at different phases of life. And so I've had therapy for PTSD, and I've had it, for this specific thing I have. So I thought, I know how it feels to be able to talk about a traumatic thing, and have it not be feeling like it's happening right now. I know what that sensation is because I've done this therapy and I've gotten to that place with my other trauma, right? So I had that like experience in my mind of what that looked like. What I didn't realize at the time was I was still dissociating, so I wasn't necessarily healing the trauma or resolving the trauma. It was just, I was able to compartmentalize it differently. And so I could talk about it in a distanced, separate way without it tearing me apart, and I could be helpful, but it wasn't really resolved. And so I didn't know the difference. I thought that I had it, and so at some point, right, I had decided, I need to change my job. I need to do some things that make me happier, split with the guy, that we weren't right for each other. We broke up, and I got a different job working days again, and I reconnected with a lot of people I had lost connections to. So yes, so we broke up. I moved into an apartment complex where a friend of mine lived already. And so she was like my lifeline for a while.
Oh, that's good.
And I got a day job and was able to do theater again and was able to reconnect with all of these people that I'd lost connections to, because this was pre MySpace, pre Facebook, where if you stopped doing your social things, you literally fell off the planet for these people, So reconnected with a lot of folks, and all of that felt really good and really positive. And I started sharing if it came up, like in some sort of way,
organically,
organically, I would acknowledge the fact that I had had a miscarriage, because I knew how big a deal that was that someone told me about theirs. And so I didn't talk about it in any kind of detail. I would just drop it in like a nugget. Yes, I've been through that, And a friend of mine, and this was probably 2 years after my miscarriage, got pregnant accidentally. And she actually wanted kids. She's got like five or six now. She's got like a brood. But her first pregnancy was a stillborn. And so she got much farther along than I had. And actually had to go through like birth. And that's very different. Physically very, very different, and emotionally very different. But she knew that I had a miscarriage. And so I was the first person that she called after her family, after everybody, knew, because she needed to talk about it with someone who had been there. And we got off the phone. I was helpful, right? I know how to be helpful. I know how to be supportive, and I know how to not make it about me. So we got off the phone, and I had the biggest panic attack right there, and felt like what she had just told me about was happening to me, which is a very PTSD reaction to have. And I thought, oh, crap, I need to get my butt into a therapist's office like now, because I'm clearly not over this, and I'm, it's clearly not resolved. I need to figure out what I need to do to move past this, because I can't have it feeling like it's happening to me when it's happening to someone else. Because I know that's not healthy. So I found a therapist, and she gave me some CBT exercises, cognitive behavioral therapy for those in the know, and
There you go.
some writing stuff that I had already done in past therapies that had worked for me before. We did the same kind of thing, some talk therapy. And I didn't see her for very long. I knew what I was there for. I knew what I needed to do. She gave me the tools. I did it, right? And that was how I moved through my life, still dissociated. So I did resolve that trauma, right? At that point. But it took a long time to stop dissociating out of habit, which is a thing that kind of faked me out. It made me think that I was farther along than I was in that
I
healing
see.
process.
I get it.
So yeah, I just it can surprise you. Like, for anyone listening who has past trauma, who has dealt with PTSD, who is also dealing with this, that can totally happen. It can sneak up on you and really surprise you. You can think that you're farther along. You can think that you're feeling okay. And then it just comes back.
And
So
that's true, I think, of the partners as well.
the what?
The partners, the boyfriend, the girlfriend, the husband, the wife, the partner. It's going to be different because they're looking at it from a different side, but it could sneak up on them too when they think, okay, they think, okay, we're doing all right, we're doing okay, and something can trigger it again. So it's really important, I think, to have those conversations. And they're scary and they're hard. And sometimes they're just straight up embarrassing. Or my body is doing this now, or it's just, that's, again, I just think that these conversations are so important and we can't be scared to have them. Actually, that's not true. Let me rephrase that. We can be scared to have them, but it's important to find someone that you feel safe with. You're going to do it anyway. Does that make sense? And the dissociation thing, I think sometimes now that you're saying this and I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm not trying to make this about me, but like, oh, I maybe that's what I'm doing. Because when, Travis passed away, I didn't get to have my babies, and moving forward, and then I had an appointment at the doctor's office and we found out I needed pretty much an emergency hysterectomy. I thought, oh shit, there goes my chance to have babies. I was upset, but I think I was more worried how my current boyfriend and my mother-in-law were going to feel. She wasn't going to get to be a grandma. And I kind of just squished it down because it was all happening so fast. I'm in the hospital. And then it comes out at the most bizarre times where it's been 5 years. For example, I was dress shopping not too long ago for a formal evening gown, and I'm standing in this very posh store in just my bra and underpants, and I look in the full-length mirror while I'm waiting for the dress to be brought out, and I see all the scars on my stomach. And I lost my shit. I started crying.
Yeah.
The saleswoman was like, "It's okay if you don't like sequins. We can find something else."
Oh
I'm like, "That's not it." And then she said, "Well, just
Oh.
go ahead and try it on." And luckily, one of my besties was there, and she's like, "Just take the dress away. Just give us a minute." She kind of
Yeah.
ran interference, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just I feel like, oh, okay, not quite done yet. Not quite
Yeah.
done. And then yesterday, I was on the app, the website called Houzz. It's like Pinterest, but for house stuff, you can find contractors.
Oh, don't tell me about these
Oh,
things.
it's oh my God, it's H, it's like house, but instead of an S and an E, it has two Z's, like Houzz. And you
Don't
can
need any
create
more.
idea books, just like
Okay.
Pinterest, and for rooms and get landscaping ideas and library ideas and what, mudroom ideas and how to decorate your kitchen, all kinds of stuff. And you can find prices and
Oh
contractors,
my
and it's
gosh.
glorious.
Are they paying you?
No, they're not, but they should. Just saying. Anyway, so I stumbled across it again yesterday. I'm like, oh yeah. So I log in and I click my idea book. I'm like, oh, that's what I was gonna do with my office. I was gonna make it look like this, or these are the colors I was gonna choose. I'm scrolling through and I don't have them separate, like library, living room, bedroom.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the nursery ideas came up, and you can write notes, just like with Pinterest. You can write yourself
Yeah.
little notes. And I would write comments that Travis and I, oh, Travis like this, but not this. And Travis would want to do this, but not that. Or I like this color, but not that crib or whatever. This was just yesterday. Then I was kind of useless for about an hour because I just
Yeah.
sat there staring at it. That was something I'm never going to get to have. And some might say, oh, you could still adopt. But, I have made the choice not to adopt. And it's hard for me not to make excuses or justify stuff. But it was hard to see that idea board when, because when I created it, it reminds me of what I lost. Not just the babies, but my spouse too.
Yeah.
But yeah, just I realize again, with all grief, it never really goes away. We grow around it. We grow and go through it. But I think that stuff stays with us. It becomes a part of who we are forever.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've been doing so much work in therapy, and I have really gotten a lot out of it. And what I think is really neat now is I can look back on that and I really remember a lot of the experience. If I focus, I can remember how it felt. I can remember what everything looks like. I can remember the apartment. I can remember a lot of stuff. But the trauma of it has resolved. I don't have the panic, and I don't have the, oh, it feels like it's happening now. It feels like a thing that happened to me once. And that's new for me, to be able to look back and go, that's a thing that happened. It's not who I am. It's a thing that happened. And I feel it differently than I feel it differently than other losses. Because I think for me, it was more of a physical loss than it was an emotional loss. And because I didn't want it.
Right.
And that's been enormous, to be able to recognize that in myself and go, I'm okay having lost that, is different. That's different from other women who miscarry or can't conceive, or have trouble conceiving and want to be parents. It is that loss experienced totally differently. And oh man, we just all need to be able to exist in the same world and have it be okay that it's different. Mm-hmm.
Do you still think of it as grief though?
I think that I grieved, but I think that I'm done. And that is so different from every other loss I've ever had in my life.
Oh, okay. I'm learning so much. This is so weird. Every time I have a conversation with someone on this podcast, just when I think, okay, I know what I'm talking about, and I'm not saying I'm an expert or anything like that, but I come away going, oh, seeing things new, seeing things, and I'm hoping this is way for our listeners too, because even here, I'm just saying it will always be a part of you. It's something that will always be a part of you that happened to you,
mm-hmm.
but like you said, you're done. That's over
it,
now.
It really feels done. And part of what helped that for me, that process complete, was when I finally did reconcile whether or not I wanted to be a parent post miscarriage. Because I also think it's really important to acknowledge that we can totally change our minds. Just because you said you want to have kids doesn't mean you always want to have kids. Just because you said you never want to have kids doesn't mean you're never going to want to have kids. We are different people as we grow. And so
Shoot,
we
I'm
can
a different
change our minds.
I'm different
right?
than when we first started this conversation. Yeah.
So that's a thing. And it's also okay to never want to have kids and not change your mind. So I think, you know, for me, it was a conversation I had with the man who is now my husband before we got married, and we were together a long time before we even got engaged. And we had conversations about what our marriage would be and what we wanted out of life. And when the topic of kids came up, that was an intense conversation because I could not figure out how I felt, because I had the physical, hormonal, I was pregnant, and now I'm not still, because I was still experiencing the trauma. I was, you know, in like a delayed way.
Oh, okay.
And at the same time, who I am at my core, I didn't want it. And so I hadn't sorted through all that yet. But when we had that conversation and I finally said, I'm okay never having kids, it felt so, I felt really, really certain that I was right when I said that, that that was true mm-hmm. for me. And it ceased all of the turmoil that was going on about do I, don't I, how do I feel physically, emotionally, you know, whatever. And years before I processed everything else in therapy and was able to resolve other traumas, you know, this was a major milestone, was having that conversation and being on the same page with a partner that I was planning to be with for indeterminate future, you know? So that was really important. And I think that moment, helped me resolve the trauma of the miscarriage more than other moments, more than the CBT therapy, more than the talk therapy. Just being able to decide how I truly felt and own it and be cool with it.
That's so cool.
And have someone else be cool with it too.
Yeah. I love having this conversation with you, Jossie. I'm just over here going, I mean, the viewers can't see us, but I'm like nodding my head going, Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a really big deal. If anything is to happen to me in the future, I'm gonna feel it differently than I did then because I don't dissociate by habit anymore. And that's enormous because I really feel like if you feel it fully, it really can resolve much quicker. But I just didn't feel things fully. I put up a big, well, some people say wall. I always use boxes as my metaphor. Put it in a box, put it away. And every once in a while, I'll take out the box and talk about it for a little bit and then close up the box and put it away. And that was how I dealt with every uncomfortable thing, every traumatic thing, every horrible thing. So I don't do that anymore, which is great.
It's
It also
huge.
means I cry more, like happy cry or moved cry or sad cry or angry cry. It happens more readily than it used to, and that surprised me. But I think that's like fully physically feeling things.
Like you're giving yourself permission to cry?
No, like, oh, the
Like,
tears just naturally come because they're a part of my body, and my body's feeling this, and I'm feeling
oh,
it, and it's all
okay,
one
I see what
thing.
you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, pre, you know, in the times before. When dissociating was a lifestyle, as how my therapist put it to me, I would feel a thing, but you wouldn't see it on my face necessarily, or hear it in my voice. And I would wait until I was all alone to cry or scream or whatever I needed to do,
Wow.
and just tighten it up, you know, in the present moment. And so it made me really awesome in a crisis, because I could focus on the steps. But and I
So
still keep that skill, but
I want to
I'm not going to do
interject.
it, you know, accidentally anymore.
Yeah, I want to interject. I re-listened to, so Jocelyn was a guest on a previous. She was our first guest on this podcast talking about how to help others when like your friends or loved ones are grieving. And you made a comment that when you came to my house the day that Travis died, you were there for me. And it was not, I don't remember exactly how you said it, something about how I didn't need to see, you weren't going to cry or deal with that because you didn't need to see me, or wait. I didn't need to see you crying when it,
It
happened to
wasn't
me.
about
Yours,
me.
but you know what? It is because you're an important friend and you're in my life. So it, in a way, kind of is about you. Like because by proxy or whatever you want to call it. But,
I almost feel like I should go back and listen to that and be like, is there any unhealthy dissociative stuff in there that I advised people to?
We can only do, or we can only make choices with the knowledge that's in front of us right then, or the experiences that we have. And as we grow, I mean, hell, I did it already in this episode. I came into this episode thinking, grief is always going to be a part of you and it shapes you and everything. That is true for some people. Some people, they can put it over here and it's part of their past and it doesn't affect future stuff. So I'm still learning, or maybe I got it wrong. And next year when I'm doing an episode on miscarriages and grief and wanting to be pregnant and that kind of grief, I'll see things differently too. And I'll revise or I'll say other things that may contradict what I'm saying right now. Or I found a better way to do it. I'm evolving.
Well, and you know, my experience is that of someone with a lot of intersecting trauma. Right. And so that's also very different from others. And you know, I cannot imagine though that I'm the only one who has gone through both things and had them impact each other. It's
I'm sure you're
entirely too
not.
common for both of those things, unfortunately. So yeah, I gotta believe that there are other women out there going, yeah, there's something very wrong with me. I'm not feeling anything that I should be feeling right now. And I don't know how to feel about this. Like, that's got to be out there. There have to be other women that are thinking that. So, you know, to them, I just say, man, just do whatever brings you comfort in the moment, because it's hard to navigate.
Yeah. Thanks for opening up about this. And I always say, you know, we're scratching the surface of this, because you and I could spend hours, days, weeks, months talking about this.
Yes.
And still not get all the way through it.
Yeah.
But I want to initiate those conversations, generate those conversations. And yeah, it could be scary as fuck, man, getting out there and saying, hey, this happened to me. And hey, this is how I felt. And putting yourself out there. But like you said, there's got to be other people who are feeling it too.
Yeah.
Who might be feeling all alone right now and going, oh, what's wrong with me? Or, you know, you know, I was very vocal about when I wanted to have kids and all the treatments and the hormone crap and the shots. And sometimes I thought, man, I bet people are sick of hearing me talk about this. Shut up already. I thought, no. And I live my life mostly out loud. There's some parts I, you know, I keep to myself for a little bit, but I want to have these difficult conversations. I want to have that friend be able to come to me and say, hey, this happened. Let's talk. So go out there, talk to your friends, get to know them again, right? Just,
yeah.
I mean,
tell them
you
they
have
can call you when they have random thoughts that they can't figure out.
Yeah. Be that safe space for them. Be a safe space for somebody. Jossie, thank you for doing this. And again, I know we only talked an hour getting into this, and we could talk longer, and I'm going to bring you back on and have you talk more later.
Happy to.
Thank you. I hope that this conversation helps you start your own conversations with your friends or loved ones. It can be hard to do, and you may not know where to start. Just know that you're not alone, and there's no right way or wrong way to feel. Sometimes talking to a professional can help, so please don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help. If you would like to hear another episode on this topic, please check out Season 2, Episode 2, where we focus primarily on infertility and miscarriage grief. Thank you for listening. We are grateful for your support. You can now contribute to the show by going to the website Buy Me a Coffee to leave us a donation. The link is included on our website and in the show notes, just to make it easy for you. If you know someone who would like to share their story, please contact us at griefandfrozenlasagnas@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate us on Apple and leave us a comment. We read each and every one. Grief and Frozen Lasagnas is a Patronica production. It's written and hosted by Veronica Day. Music and sound design by Patrick Gary and the musical talents of the Sideshow Symphony. To hear this and other music by the Sideshow Symphony, go to www.sideshowsymphony.com or find them on Apple Music or the streaming service of your choice. If you liked what you heard or know anyone who might like this, please help us spread the news by sharing it. If you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review to let other people know about us. It really does help. If you'd like to be part of the show, see photos, or you'd like to find and listen to our other episodes, please visit us at griefandfrozenlasagnas.com. Thanks for listening today, and hopefully in the future. Take care of yourself and be kind.